Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 So bottom of page 4950, Anucheda 109. The use of logic and understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in these words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.2.35. The Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Here the words drashta lakshita mean first. The individual spirit soul is the seer. The question may then be asked, how does he see? The answer is given in the words drishtyer buddhya buddhi, by seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Here are two considerations. Without the presence of the seer, the act of seeing the visible world does not occur. Therefore it is by the seer who sees with the help of intelligence and other tools that seeing occurs. Does that make sense? It means unless there's somebody to see how seeing will go on, right? Because seeing means it's a verb, it's active, something's happening, there's an action. So unless there's an entity there, action doesn't happen. Does that make sense? Yeah? So he's pointing out, but how does he see? He sees through the intelligence. Because the intelligence themselves, then they, that is actually how senses work, right? Intelligence means it discerns between things. So senses mean they discern something, no? Does that make sense? Yeah? Pun not intended. Right? So you can see something is red, or something is moving, or you can smell difference in fragrances, or taste different tastes, right? Or you can tell something is hot or cold or smooth or rough. That's intelligence. Does that make sense? So it is through the intelligence that the senses are functioning, right? So without intelligence, the senses don't work, right? If you're unconscious, the senses are still there, but nothing happens. There's no perception, no anything, right? Does that make sense? So when that's conscious, then the intelligence is working. So that is proved. So here is he's pointing out how the logic is used, right? So this isn't just a point. This is showing us how to use logic here, right? How to perceive this. Right? Because otherwise we'll just take externals, but we're taking, well, how is that external functioning? So that means there has to be someone who's performing an activity on something else, then only there's happening, right? Does that make sense? It means when a subject and object, when they combine, then there's a verb. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is verbs don't just happen. There has to be at least a subject, right? Minimum, there has to be a subject. And then you're describing simply the existence of that subject, right? Krishna is swimming, right? Does that make sense? So here, the point is the we would generally take it that swimming would be the verb, no? But technically it's not. It's is the verb. Right? Because swimming is actually describing Krishna. Does that make sense? So technically what you have, the swimming Krishna exists or is. That's actually what's going on there. So that's what you call intransitive. Right? It's not doing anything. But Krishna swims from, you know, how you say, in the Jamuna, how you say? to the other bank, right? Then swimming becomes the verb, because he's doing that to get to the other bank, right? But still, you have to have Krishna, you have to have the bank, then swimming happens. Does that make sense? So, the whole point is therefore it proves someone is seeing. Does that make sense? There's existence. Otherwise, the Mayavadis will say there's no existence. It's all Brahman. But there has to be someone who's seeing. Does that make sense? That's the whole point he's making. We have to remember that Jiva Goswami doesn't leave any stone unturned in exacting the logic of Krishna consciousness, right? That's why he's known as the greatest scholar that there ever was. Right? Does that make sense? Okay, so now we move on. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described. How is he described? He is described as the Supersoul in the hearts of all the seers. In this way, he is seen by them. That is the meaning of the words Bhagavan Sarva Bhuteshu Lakshita Svatmana Harihi. As was said before, the presence of the Supersoul is understood in two ways. Because the living entities are not independent in their actions and in their encounters with either pleasure or pain, and because the living entities cannot act without external help, one can understand by logic intelligence that the Supersoul must exist. Right? Means this material energy is not, it's not what's, that's not what's controlling it. Right? Because we're being controlled by that energy. And the body and the senses, this is dead matter. Right? So that's not actually what's doing it. Right? So we know from before, as when we're talking about the universal form, that the energies are going on. So because Krishna is seeing, then only we can see. Right? When we see after Krishna is seen, then in that way the living entity can be called the seer. Right? Otherwise, it's actually Krishna is the seer, we're the seen. Does that make sense? That's the point. But because it's we are doing a small amount of seeing, therefore we're called the seer. But actually, Krishna is the seer. So it's being pointed out is that the living entity is not independent in what happens. Right? You're being controlled. The material energy, your pleasures, pains, they come without asking. Right? Of course, we only notice the pains. We don't notice the pleasure also comes without asking. You know, like that. But the point is it's happening. Right? So that means then the Supersoul is there guiding. This makes sense? Yeah. Here the word Atma means by eyes. By giving him eyes, the Supersoul enables the individual soul to see. By giving him ears, he enables the soul to hear. By giving him a mind, he enables the soul to think. By giving intelligence, he enables the soul to understand. This is confirmed by the following words of the Bhalava Shruti, Strir Astri. Also by seeing that the Supersoul has entered all living beings, one can understand that these Supersouls are all expansions or part of a great person. In this way, one can infer the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That the Supersoul is a partial expansion of the Supreme Lord is confirmed by the Lord himself in these words, Bhagavad Gita 10:42. But what need is there, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. Right? Means we could go on unlimitedly pointing out how Krishna is in everything, right? He is the writing of your pen. Right? He is the ability to accommodate what is written with that pen in the notebook. Right? Does that make sense? He is the controlled ability or the controlled technique of your fingers that allows you to write. Does that make sense? He is the energy that goes down. He is the energy, or let's say the power of the muscle that moves those fingers. Right? He is the energy that goes down the nerve that pushes the muscle. Right? He is the life force that pushes on the nerves that makes you move. Does this make sense? He is that mind that desires to move the pencil. Does that make sense? So like this, we could go on all day pointing out how Krishna is in everything. Anything that's actually happening is Krishna. All right? But Krishna puts that aside. What need is there for all this detailed knowledge? You just know that it's Krishna, and he's entered into everything. Right? So basically we know that, and we know that therefore it works. Because we're trying to bring it back to the person. Does that make sense? But we don't become distracted by material energy because we're attracted to it. But we know that what actually is the working element of attraction, that's Krishna. Does that make sense? Yes.
If we know that everything there is actually Krishna, because that's the only thing that is, so how can it be that this material world is only a fragment of Him, if everything is Him?
If everything is Him, if everything is Him, how is the material world only a fragment? Well, first we start off, the spiritual world is 3/4 of the cosmic creation. So material world is only 1/4, so that right there is a fragment. Right?
Yeah, but it's Him.
It's Him, but it's that part of Him. I mean, it's like, is the tip of your little finger you? Yes. And then could we go and when you come, then we just talk to the tip of your little finger and ignore the rest of your body? Right? Does that make sense?
It says that mind, intelligence, and soul seeker, they constitute the subtle material body.
Mm-hmm.
Are they made out of the same material elements, or is it just different material elements, or is it just one element performing different functions?
Is the mind, intelligence, false ego different elements, or one element performing different functions? They're different elements, but technically they're just different aspects of the mind. But they're different elements. That's why I said there's 24 elements. So one is mind, one is ego, one is intelligence. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like your body. You have head, you have arms, you have legs. You can't say that the arm and the leg are the same. They're different. They have different functions, but they're still part of the body.
Well, the arm and the leg are made out of the same matter, right?
What's your point?
I'm trying to see if the mind, intelligence, the pulse, are they made out of different material elements, or is just one quality made the same element, just doing different things?
We already said that they are. See, it's like this. And what do you want to do with this knowledge once you get it? You know what I'm saying? Then why do you want it? The kid is jumping up and down and demands that he gets something. And if you ask why, they go, I don't know.
It just came up in a conversation.
It came up in a conversation. Okay, but... So it's just interest. It's just interest. Okay. But do you want to understand it? Or it's just, you know, it's like the Guinness Book of World Records was started because Guinness is a what do you call it? It's a kind of drink, a beverage that they serve in a certain, corner houses on the streets of, England and that, you know. They have nice names like cat and crocodile and all these kind of things, you know. So guys would sit around, and because they get bored talking, so they have to come up with something interesting. So this one guy then would go around and collect facts and figures of the most amazing stuff. So then he had the most nice things to say over his, glass of Guinness. Right? Does that make sense? So, is this, a barroom discussion, or do you actually want to do something with it? Okay, then you have to try to understand it. Right? So the point is it's 3 separate elements that are part of one thing. Right? just because they're part of one thing, does that mean they have to be different elements? They have to be the same? Or have to be different? Does that make sense? The point is this, it's called the subtle body. So that's one thing. So there's something common about them, right? And that's the mind. But there still is separate things. And the subtle body and the gross body are separate things, but they're all counted together as the conditioned living entity. Right? And then you add the soul into that, which is something completely different from matter, gross or subtle. And then that packaged together, that is what we say, this is the person. Right? Then you have to actually throw into it the super soul and all his energies, and he's God. He's completely different from all that. You understand? So that's the point, is that if you're only going to go by externals, you won't get so far in our philosophy. You'll catch a lot. But if you want to apply it, then you have to be more introspective. You know what I'm saying? Because then you're dealing with subtleties. Right? That's the point. Mind is like that. You want something. Let's say you're very hungry. But the situation is a little, you're not quite sure about the situation and all that. And then somebody comes and asks you if you want something to eat. You do, but what do you say? No. Oh, no, I'm fine. Right? So if we can't take these subtleties, how are we going to put them together into something that works? Does that make sense? Yeah? So the conversation should actually be trying to get somewhere rather than just be argumentative or prove who's just read something that no one else has heard, or you more are technically able to establish or prove something. You know, like that? You know, like the two brahmacharis get together and each one's more humble than the other and trying to touch the other's feet and not get their feet touched, and they go on wrestling and fighting for 5 minutes, you know, like that in their competition of who's the most humble, right? You know what I'm saying? So it's fun. It's a exercise in friendship, not humility, but friendship. You know what I'm saying? So, it's nice, it's okay, but what we're saying is, what we're discussing here is how you use it. You want facts and figures, and this is not the place. Is that okay? We deal with facts and figures, but our purpose in dealing with them is how to use them. Right? Otherwise, we can collect so much knowledge, but if we don't use it, what's the use? Yeah? Okay. Anything else? Yes.
There is something that I don't understand. Like, since Krishna, from Krishna everything emanates, and he's the origin of everything. I cannot like understand how overcome this duality. Like, for example, in this world there are so bad things, so much perversion, like rape, murder, animal slaughtering, sexual perversion, and I cannot understand. I cannot connect these two. Yes, like that Krishna is the original of everything, and everything emanates from Krishna. Everything that is here is like a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. But I cannot understand how overcome this duality. That how can someone see that all these things that are here actually come from Krishna, especially in this age now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll start somewhere. The first principle, does God's position or qualities depend upon us? Right? Does that make sense? It's just like this. If you're in a forest and a tree falls over, It makes a sound, no? What if you are not there and that tree falls over? Does it make sound? But some are not sure. Why? Because they actually think they're the cause of things. So, is God God because we accept He is, or is God God because He is? Does that make sense? Right. Where are you from?
I'm from
Greece. Okay. Okay. So, this is just the first thing. Is it important? Does it matter if we accept or don't accept His existence, that He exists or not? Right? Does that make sense? Is His existence dependent upon us accepting Him as God? No. Okay. So then, it's a matter of accepting that. How you say? Okay, let's put it like this. How do you tell something is hot? But why do you call it hot? But I'm saying, but what's the difference between something that's not hot and something that's hot? If it's not hot, what is it? It's cold, yeah, okay. So now, how do you describe hot if there's no cold? Okay? So how do you say, now you've decided that not rape or not murder is good. But how do you define that as good unless it exists? Right? Unless bad is there. Does that make sense? So in the spiritual world, you have good, more good, most good. But then you have here, which is the reflection, then you have the reflection of that, which is bad. Right? Does that make sense? Because the point is how do you tell something is good unless there's something that's not good? Isn't it? Does that make sense? So therefore, the concept of what's bad, so that you can actually identify and deal with good, then there has to be bad. And so where's this bad going to come from? Yeah. It means unless you want to take up a more contemporary viewpoint that there's someone separate from God that God can't control and He's making all the trouble. Does that make sense? But unfortunately, then what does that mean if God can't control? Because God's the supreme Lord, the supreme controller. But, you know, but somehow or another, this one guy, He can't control. Doesn't make sense, right? So that means it is elements of God, but that's not of any interest to God. Right? It's just like you walk on the path, is there dirt on the bottom of your feet? But is that important to you? No. So it's not something that, you know what I'm saying? So the front of God is all the nice things. The back of God is the origin of all the not nice things. But He is a person, even His back is great. Okay? Right? But His expansions, and it expands enough, then at some point, those become prominent. Right? There's form, because Vishnu then expands as Shiva. Right? And then there are forms of Shiva you just don't even want to know about. You know? Just like there's forms of Maya you don't want to know about. Right? There's one called Matangi. She's an expansion of one of the 10 main ones. And so her, how you say, her uniqueness is she eats remnants, you know, other people's food and stuff like that, and has sex with anybody. No discrimination. Right? Sound familiar? think you got a country full of them. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay, so that's all an expansion of this. And I think she's one of the better ones. It gets worse. Right? Okay? Does that make sense? So the whole point is these are elements, but it's just like material energy is coming from Krishna. But it's not something interesting. Right? So therefore we focus on what is interesting, what's nice. Because these other things are there if you want to get involved in them. But the point is that's not, you know. Because the point is if God is all good, he is, but still he's the origin of what's bad. Because otherwise, then where's our independence? Right? Where's our independence to choose that we want to serve God as opposed to not? Does that make sense? So our own sense of morality we can't then put on God and therefore find a fault. That was the point in the beginning. Does that make sense? You know, that's the thing. Because basically it's an economic viewpoint. You know? Because we have to remember that economics, justice, and morality are the same entity. Right? Just three different features. Right? That's why you see that those who are the most attached to morality are the ones that are most attached to economics. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Okay? Okay. So references from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bhagavad Arkamruchimala. In his book, Bhagavad Arkamruchimala, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur counts these two verses from Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, within the Abhideya division, assigning it specifically to Chapter 14, entitled Bhakti Pratikul Vichara, Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti. Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. When there are ample earthly flats to lie on, what is the necessity of cots and beds? When one can use his own arms, what's the necessity of a pillow? When one can use the palms of his hands, what is the necessity of varieties of utensils? When there is ample covering or the skins of trees, what is the necessity of clothing? Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers being dried up no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed, or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? So therefore, one doesn't... means the materialist works hard to make money. You know, they're intelligent, they work hard, and they get their results. So, in one sense, you could say that they can deserve to be proud because they worked for it. They got it, right? They've done something and they've accomplished something. But at the same time, is that pride, what is the need for the devotee to subject themselves to it for their own personal needs? Does that make sense? For Krishna, yes, we can go and, you know, be insulted by such persons, but for ourselves, no. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it becomes an obstacle to devotional service because then you have to associate with them. You then have to demean oneself because here's someone who's made money. So that's nice. But economics is the second level of consciousness. Devotees are on the fifth level. So why should one demean oneself before them? Because then they think they're superior. Oh, you worship God, but you have to come to me to get your maintenance. Therefore, I'm better than God. Right? Like that. So it's rare to find persons with money who are actually humble, who don't be like this. I've seen a few, but it's rare. Very rare. Right? So this is unfavorable, right? Also, is Why, in other words, another element there is why expand more than what you need? One can unlimitedly desire things, but do you actually need it? Is it useful? Right? That's the point. What's actually needed for your conditioned nature so that you're comfortable, so that you are therefore able to focus on devotional service and rather than worry about your material facilities? Right? Only that much you need. You don't need more than that. You could get more than that, but do you need it? Right? Do you need 50 pairs of shoes? Right? Of course, each one is for, you know, walking down this side of the street, that one for walking down that side of the street, this one for when you're not going to walk on the sidewalk, you're going to walk in the road, you know, this one for walking upstairs, this one for walking downstairs, this one for standing on the stairs, you know, like that. It means we do have a really good reason for all these 50 pairs of shoes. But do we actually need it? That's the point. So then that money could have been used for something else. More, you know, that you actually need, or giving to other people who do need it. Does that make sense? So that's the point is, don't waste your time needing more than what you actually require, and be very careful about how you go about getting that, that it's not, how you say? Demeaning. Does that make sense? Okay. The Thakur counts the next two verses within the Abhideya division, assigning them specific to chapter 14, entitled Pratikul Vichar, Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti. Oh, it's the same one. Oh, this is just a repeat. Okay. Is this the same one? Okay. The Thakur counts the next two verses within the Sambandha division, assigning them specific to chapter 4, entitled Bhagavat Surup Tattvam, the factual truth of Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami, Ms. 2.2.17.18. Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. In that transcendental state of Labdo Prasanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over the mundane creatures. And what to speak of the demigods themselves? Nor is there the mode of material goodness, nor passion, nor ignorance, nor even the false ego, nor the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. The transcendentalists desire to avoid everything godless, for they know that supreme situation in which everything is related to the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. Right, does not create perplexities. Perplexities give nice taste. Right? You're sitting, you're bored. Create a perplexity. Give some, you know, meaning to your life, right? Gets the bile moving, gets the nerves going, you know, gets the hair standing on end, it gets all kinds of things happening. But why bother? Right? Those who are transcendental, then they aren't disturbed by anything because they just worship Krishna, right? That also gives a taste, right? It's also recommended. And not only that, it's everybody. The gopis, they found it pretty good, right? Mother Yashoda, like that. Servants, friends. Kundalata, she's a friend of Krishna, not conjugal, friend. She's his cousin. She's his cousin, right? They're satisfied, right? Nanda Baba's satisfied. The cowherd boys are satisfied, right? They don't need to create perplexities, right? Perplexities come on their own. You know what to do. There's a forest fire surrounding us. What are we supposed to do, right? So they could go, you know, oh, we're going to die, and you know, who's going to feed my cat, and you know, so many different things like that. But no, they just turn to Krishna. So even in their perplexity, they surrender to Krishna, right? But only if there is one, then they deal with it in connection to Krishna. But they don't create them, right? Does that make sense? So one doesn't need to become absorbed in the material things by becoming, by creating perplexities that don't exist. Does that make sense? I know it's fun, keeps you busy, but it's not important. Right? The transcendentalists don't bother because they get so much more taste out of seeing Krishna and worshipping Krishna than they'd get from material perplexities. So that's another way of looking at that it must be pretty good. Right? In other words, what we get out of creating a unfortunate situation for ourselves, the taste we get from that, the intensity of that, Krishna consciousness is more. Does that make sense? Yes. Labdo prashanti. I think that means where one is, there's labdo prashanti and what's that? Sarupa upalabdi. These are the two states of transcendence. These were, I think, described a few pages back. Page 37, quite a few pages back. 37. Okay. Okay. Just after text. Yeah. Yeah. Just saying. I think there was another one where we got into also. So basically, lebdo prashanti means that one is satisfied, is basically one is Brahman realized. One is satisfied in his Brahmanness. So there's that he's gained something and he is satisfied in it. While Sarup Upalabdhi means you're actually satisfied in your relationship with the Lord. So that it would be the difference between Mukti and Brahma-Bhuta. Is that? Does that make sense? So he's pointing out here just the transcendentalists in that Labdo, means devotees are automatically Labdo Prashanti, but they go farther into Sarup Upalabdhi. They actually establish themselves as servants of Krishna. Well, the transcendentalists don't. So, point is that there's no modes of passion, ignorance, nothing, because that's what gives you the trouble. So you're satisfied, right? At the same time, is then you get the inverse, is that we use those troubles from those modes and natures to find our pleasure. Right? Oh, no one likes me, I'm so terrible, I'm the worst, I'm the this, I'm the that. We can go all day like that. You know? Oh, this one said this, that one said that. Oh, I can't do this, I can't do that. Oh, if I go here, this one will say this. If I go there, that one will say that. Right? We keep ourselves very busy. Creates a lot of, you know, emotion and feelings and meaning to our life. Right? Now we have a real meaning why we shouldn't do this, you know, go to the program because, you know, I don't have, you know, this sorry, or that one may say that, or she looked at me like this yesterday, so now I have a very good, valid reason why I'll sit in my house and just feel bad and not go to the temple. Right? Does that make sense? So he's showing that it's very interesting, this is why I was saying about the mind, is that even though we want to be happy, then if there's not something that's making us happy, we'll find something that makes us unhappy that will give us an experience, right? Because bottom line is there should be some experience happening, right? Sit in the corner, you're bored stiff, then you'd rather have something not nice going on than to be bored stiff, right? Does that make sense? Right? Better a stupid conversation than uncomfortable silences, right? Does that make sense? So what is being pointed out here is they're happy because they're beyond the modes. And at the same time as being beyond the modes, they're not interested in using the modes to make themselves happy, so-called happy. Okay?
Actually, to not get yourself involved in the modes, you need a kind of framework.
You need a framework. That's very intelligent. That's actually the whole point, is that we see from here is all this is all based on perception, no? everything we've been discussing is based on perception. It means there's a reality of God and his existence, but our perception of the material world and of God, that's actually what we're dealing with. Right now our perception is perverted, and we're trying to make the perception correct in line with what's the reality of who is God and who are we. So to do that, you must use the intelligence. You must discriminate. Right? Because the mind is just going to go on wanting to do what it's been doing for the last unlimited lifetimes. Right? So if you want to find, but it hasn't been, but by intelligence we say, I've been tried everything and I'm still not happy. So there must be something wrong with this method. Right? So, therefore, then we need that discrimination. To discriminate, you have to have something to compare it against, like what Mati was talking about before, about what's good and what's not good. But that is unlimited. Everybody has a different perception, so how do you decide what is good or what's not good? Therefore, God gives his opinion. Right? Because he is everything, so everything's there, but then he shows the gradations of what is there, because him in his natural form, how he interacts with his devotees, that's the supreme correct state. And anything that breaks that down or takes it away then starts to get less important till it actually, you know, inverts or perverts. Then it's just getting downright nasty. Does that make sense? So that is the whole thing, is we're trying to create a framework. That's the whole idea. So Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, this is your main framework. Everything hangs on this. Right? And then from that, then there's all the breakdowns. Bhaktivinoda Thakur here is giving, you see Sambandha, and it has 7 divisions. So this is in chapter 4. Right? So the 7 divisions of the Sambandha. Right? And then like that, then there's, I don't remember the numbers, but so many divisions of Abhideya, so many divisions of Prayojana. And then there's the scriptures that describe everything. Right? So scriptures describes everything that deals with human life, that's progressive. And what is not progressive for a human being. In other words, what activities will not keep him as a human being? He'll drop out of the human species. Right? It doesn't get into, you know, the exact way of, where does the spider insert the proboscis into the bug? You know, it doesn't get into that because it's not important for humans. Right? If you're a spider, yes, but then Super Soul will tell you where to put it, and you don't have to worry about, reading your textbook and stuff like that. Right? So what's important for human life, that's given. And then it's gradations. Karma, Jnana, Yoga, Bhakti. Right? So then the Bhagavatam is showing that therefore the Bhakti is the highest. And of all the different things that's going on, it's actually the Lord. And from the Lord, then your seeing him as a person. It means his energies are there, but no, as a person, but as a person that you can have a relationship with. Okay? So we have a very set framework. That's actually one of the main things that this kind of study is to establish, is that framework by which you can observe and judge anything in your experience and how to connect it to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to do. Because then, through intelligence, you become Krishna conscious. Right? Because the sentiment is what we're ultimately trying to get to be Krishna conscious. But as long as that sentiment is connected to the material world, right? Means you have a very, let's say you have a very nice sentimental environment going on. Lots of nice emotional experiences are going on, right? Then the man says something that's purely intellectual, no emotion. What happens to that emotional environment? Does it continue? It's shattered, yeah, it just evaporates, and then it's replaced by a new emotional environment that you wish you hadn't opened your mouth. Right? Isn't it? So, this proves the point. How do you shatter your a very satisfied, happy, mundane, emotional situation? By intelligence. So, if you bring in the intelligence on everything that you do, it just shatters that emotional attachment you have to that environment. You have to remember, we're feminine. Does that make sense? So emotion really blows away our interest in something that's going on.
Yeah, but you have to have high faith.
No, you have to be smart. Right? Does the child have the higher taste for not sticking their finger in the fire? No, they stick their finger in the fire. Now, is it specifically that they just like their finger not being burnt? That's why they just walk around and never go near the fire? Or that they don't like being burnt? Right? Does that make sense? So you're discriminating between the stage of not being burnt and being burnt, and not being burnt is better. Not that you have a taste for it. Right? But you definitely have a negative taste towards being burnt. Right? So the material energy, if you look at it, everything gives trouble. Everything. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the problem. You have to make money. And when you have lots of money, then you can go out and buy that little bag of white powder. Right? Isn't it? You have lots of money, you have facility, you have lots of time, huge amount of patience, and determination, and audacity, and you're willing to put in a lot of time, then you may catch the woman. But once you've caught her, then how much you have to keep on doing exact same thing? For how long? So how much are you getting back? 3 seconds? So 3 seconds compared to how long did it take to get to that 3 seconds? How much money? How much time? How much being insulted? So after a while, the intelligence starts to go, what's going on here? Does that make sense? So then, it's not a matter of higher taste, it's a matter of starting to get really, really worried about all my hard work and, you know, putting my faith and emotions into all these things. I'm not getting the returns that, you know, one would expect. And then, by using the intelligence, you notice that everybody else is the same thing. Right? Of course, in the movies, they try to make it not look like that, but remember, the movie is 2 hours long. Okay, people, you do find people that for 2 hours are happy. Right? But in that 2 hours, even in the 2 hours, everybody's not happy. Okay, it's made by Disney, it's for little children, generally it's happy for the 2 hours. But other than that, then, is it happy? No. Right? Even in the movies, they still only get their 3 seconds. Does that make sense? So, then we start to add it up and we go, hey, it's not just me, it's everybody. And the amazing thing is everybody is endeavoring for the same thing, and everybody is at some point failing. Maybe today this one wins, but tomorrow he loses. Right? Does that make sense? So then we start to think, hey, something's going on here. So what's actually going on? So then we inquire. And that through that inquiry, that use of intelligence, then we come to the platform of finding out, oh, okay, because there's another reality. And that one we see, we've heard, is better. because it's not affected by all the things that make the trouble for us here. Right? And then, to prove that we're just purely intellectual, then that's nice, that's good enough. But otherwise, then we have plenty of stories of how people have attained perfection and have been happy. Right? So then we start to get an interest. That's where you start to catch the mind. We don't have a taste, but it's intriguing. Right? Desire is there. So taste is only there when there's attachment. But to get attachment, first there has to be desire. You have to want it.
What can motivate you to carry on wanting it if you haven't got taste?
If you haven't got taste, just the material world, it didn't work. So why it didn't work last year, why should it work this year? You know what I'm saying? If we look back, I mean, you take, I'm not sure if it was Genghis or if it was Genghis to you, or who is the guy, one of them, he was big. I don't know if it was not Attila the Hun, what's the other guy? Alexander. One of them, you know, after that he had a huge empire, and then I think it was on the night of his wedding, they drank so much, and then he fell over, bumped his head, and then drowned in his own saliva. And this is the guy who, like, conquered millions of people, you know, had empires that went from their country all the way across, you know. You know, Greece, it depends. If you're from Greece, then it was from Greece to India, or if you're not from Greece, then it's from Macedonia to India. Like that. It's a big discussion. So then, or it was from Turkey to Mongolia. It's a problem. Right? So that happened a few years ago. Right? So, I mean, the problems have been going on. It's just like, or let's take this one. If we go back, how long, there's this little place. It's kind of like between the ocean and the sand, and between more sand on the south and a few hills in the north. And in that place, besides the sand, then you have this nice sea that's full of salt. Right? And if you're very expert and you can get water onto the ground, it grows all kinds of stuff, especially good oranges. But if you don't, then it stays desert, and it's great for sheep and goats. How long have the people been fighting over this little piece of land? Right? 4,000 years? So that means the problems that are going on today have been going on for 4,000 years. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's suddenly going to be better tomorrow because I kind of lost sight of spiritual life. Right? Material life does not get any better. It doesn't change. It's the same thing. Same thing. Right? The Romans, thousands of years ago, their empire fell apart when they just got into intoxication and, you know, sense gratification and all that kind of thing. Then they lost their drive and it all fell apart. And that was thousands of years ago. Right? So it's the same. Birth, death, old age, disease goes on. Doesn't get any better. Right? Does that make sense? They say people are living longer now and this and that. Yeah, maybe in general for those who aren't educated, but you still got people that before were living to, you know, 120 years, 140 years.
Thousands.
Yeah, well, if you go back, then it was thousands. So that was a different age. Like that. Does that make sense? Right? So the whole thing is that we have a vision that intellectually we know it is correct. The mind may or may not accept it, but intellectually know it's right. And that's just a matter of keeping in good association and contemplating things realistically, and then we start to see it doesn't make any sense, you know, to do anything else. Right? I may not be inspired in spiritual life, but material life is not an alternative. You know what I'm saying? I may be bored sitting here with nothing to do, but it sure beats, you know, going over and sticking my fingers in the fire and getting them burnt, you know. I'm bored sitting in the house, yeah, but it's better than being outside and freezing, or, you know, being blown away in the tornado, or, you know, stuff like that. You know, it's like, you know, maybe pretty boring sitting in your bathroom holding on for dear life to your toilet. But it sure beats going outside and being blown, you know, from, how you say, Orlando up to, you know, New Jersey or something, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is I may at this point not be getting a real taste in spiritual life, but the material energy definitely is not offering a good, solid alternative. Does that make sense? Is it okay? Okay. The Thakur counts the next three verses within the Sambandha division, assigning them specifically to chapter 9, entitled Bhagavajja Jiva Lakshanam, Characteristics of the Fortunate Soul, 2:2, 33, 34, 37. Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Pariket. For those who are wandering in the material universe, there is no more auspicious means of deliverance than what is aimed at the direct devotional service of the Lord. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas three times, and after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him, the Personality of Godhead. Right, so there's nothing more auspicious than direct devotional service than after examining the scriptures, he's ascertained that this devotional service, which is the best of religions, then the perfection of that is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And those who do this are purified from material enjoyment and go back to Godhead. So there is a permanent solution. Right? Does this make sense? So it's very, very clear that it's the best thing to do. Within that best thing, it's because worshiping the Lord is the best thing. And the, how do you say? Yeah. And it frees one from the material energy, but situates you in the spiritual. Right? So you don't have to worry that there's any loss. So here's the best thing, but I want everything, right? I have this, I want that also. No. The point is if you have this, you don't get that. But then we're worried, well, I have this, and at least I got this. But how do I know I'll get that? Right? So then the point is they're pointing out is that those who have gotten that are happy. And they got, and they were able to give up this to get that. It worked. There was no loss in between. Right? That makes sense? This, that, it's a Upanishadic. This meaning material world, that meaning the spiritual. Okay? Et cetera. Okay. So we'll end here for today. Jai Ho Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta Ki, Danitai Gaura Premanandi.